Blog Talk Radio.
Lincoln 103, 5 Lincoln 102, Lincoln 103 and 102.
Responding to 401 Park Construction, Section 1 Boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9. Respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911, I'm attended 400 lower level near Carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and Brown.
484 suspect, the female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. Blue jeans, no further.
Control, high Frank, 401 is a route.
Good evening and welcome to another live edition of the Private Officer Beat, sponsored by Private Officer International, a security and law enforcement organization. I'm your host, Rick McCann. Glad that you are with us on this Monday, the 9th of June. And right off at the top of the hour, I want to let you know that we are facing some very severe, strong weather in the South End, Alabama here, where I'm at, and the Carolinas, Georgia, Mississippi. We've had a strong line of storms move in through Tennessee. We have very strong potential of tornadoes and strong line winds, straight line winds. So while we're on the air, we're always potentially going to be in the path of these storms. Broadcasting remotely tonight out in the field here, so we don't really know what to expect. We may get kicked off, we may not, hopefully not, but in case we do, we will conclude the show as soon as it is safe. Anyways, glad to be with you on this Monday. It's a hot, muggy, sticky, slimy. That is the weather beat. Just you know, one of those things that you do have to be concerned of, whether it's winter, spring, summer. You know, there's always going to be, obviously, those weather problems that are always going to play a big part in our lives every day. Tonight, we are going to be talking a lot about loss prevention and retail security. Shoplifting is definitely on the rise. It has been for a number of years. We've tried all sorts of punishment. We've tried jail, probation, fines. Some of the larger retailers have tried civil enforcement by mitigating their losses through a civil procedure and having the shoplifter pay large amounts rather than have them arrested. And tonight we'll be talking with a company out of Utah that has another idea, another aspect that they are actively pursuing, and that is education. They are right now in a number of retailers, and they're teaching shoplifters and educating shoplifters about, you know, a life of crime and educating them and hopefully keeping them out of jail. We'll be talking with a representative tonight of the company, and I think that it's going to be very interesting. The company is Corrective Education. Corrective Education. Can we make a change through education? Some people you can, and some you can't. Before we get any further into the program tonight, I do want to welcome our new sponsor. It's been with us for a couple of weeks. BSGInc.com, the insurance for private security. If you're in the private security industry, one of the other great fine insurance carriers that do specialize in this type of business, they'd love to talk with you. Give them a call at area code 877-404-4299 or check them out online at bsginc.com. Also check out our other new sponsor, and that is Maritime Academy. If you are involved in any type of maritime security, whether you're on the boats or you work someplace where you have to have a TWIC card, definitely give them a check on the web at Maritime Academy. I believe it is .com or .org. And they have a number of courses that you can take right there from the comfort of your home or business. Hey, talking about from your home or business, have you seen the big news on the scholarships being offered by Armour College? Right now, Armour College is offering 30 scholarships to a number of private security, public safety, legal, and other areas, courses and programs. Check them out at armourcollege.org. That is 30 independent different areas where scholarships are being offered. Again, if you'll go to their web at armourcollege.org, all of that information is right there on the web. We have had quite a tragic weekend, unfortunately, in the news. You probably have heard by now that two Las Vegas police officers were killed over the weekend simply eating lunch at a CC Pizza in Las Vegas. The officers were not on a call. They were not involved in any type of police activity. They were simply on their lunch break when two anti-government, anti-law enforcement, anti-everything and everyone people came in and without much warning, they shouted that this was the start of a revolution and opened fire, killing the two Las Vegas police officers. They then carried on next door and shot and killed a civilian and wounded several others before taking their own lives. And what's very surprising about this is that it was a male and a female. And the female actually killed the male partner and then committed suicide. So she was obviously the dominant one in this situation. But unfortunately, both officers died, one at the scene, one at the hospital. Definitely has shocked the law enforcement community. This just two days after three Royal Canadian Mounted Police constables were shot and killed in Canada and two others shot. Very tragic turn of events over the last week or so. We've had, during the month of, in the last 32 days, there have been 22 police officers killed, and what's very tragic and unique is that many times when police officers are killed, it's not really trauma-related or shooting. It's usually going to be, but it often is heart attack, it's training accidents, it's killed in car accidents. But in the past 32 days, there have been a lot of deaths of law enforcement by murder, someone killing them. We have also had a number of off-duty officers killed relating to their job, their position. Also this past week in Forsyth County, Georgia, that's just north of Atlanta, near the Lanier Lake area, if you're familiar with that, a crazy individual stormed the local courthouse, later identified as a sovereign citizen, and he brought with him his own homemade spike strips. He laid them out around the courthouse on the streets. He began to bombard the court with homemade smoke bombs and grenades and began a gun battle. Fortunately, The deputies on duty at the courthouse were able to eliminate the threat. There was a massive shootout, and the suspect was killed. And there have been a lot of these type of incidents, shootings involving law enforcement over the last few months. Very, very tragic. It seems like every day, someplace here in the U.S., there is a law enforcement involved shooting. Every day. Let me tell you, friends, you can't be too cautious in this business. It doesn't matter if you wear a uniform of security, and it doesn't matter if your uniform says law enforcement. A uniform is a uniform. A badge is a badge. We tell people that continuously. You always, on duty, off duty, it doesn't matter. You always have to continuously be thinking officer safety and never, ever let your guard down because people are crazy. They do not respect law enforcement. Many do not value their own life. And so taking your life means nothing. Nothing to them. I personally would not serve in uniform ever in any position without being armed. I just know how people are, how people think, and the dangers, even when you don't think that there are. You know, we were talking about the Las Vegas shooting while the officers were eating lunch just a couple of years ago in Lakewood, Washington. A similar incident. Four Lakewood police officers had stopped at a coffee place to have breakfast, do paperwork, and talk before their shift. They were gunned down. They were not on a police call. They were not responding to any incident. They were innocently just sitting there in uniform, sitting ducks. Officers have been shot pumping gas in their vehicle. They've been shot just driving down the road. Officer safety is job number one. You always have to keep that in mind. That's why I personally don't sit to the door in a restaurant or any place where I'm in a meeting. I want to see what's around me. People say, you're paranoid. Oh, you're over the top. Don't be ridiculous. I point to things like this and I show them. Is this being paranoid or is this learning from the past? We have to understand the world that we're living in. So to you, my friend, I tell you, officer safety first. Always be prepared to take evasive action. Always be prepared to take defensive actions and protect yourself and your loved ones. There's just no other way in the world today. We just have to be that way. We always have to think about the possibility, the potential. Speaking of, you know, yesterday I had to qualify on the firing range. And even though I had a sore wrist, yeah, I know, But I did, I had a sore wrist. But even though I had a sore wrist, I qualified 98.1. It wasn't the 100 I wanted, but 98.1, at least I will hit the target. You know, I acquired it, I hit it. So not bad. If you're not out there on the range at least twice a year and you are carrying a firearm, shame on you. There are some alternatives. You can use laser shot. You can use ammunition. You can use paintball. You can use all sorts of training weapons these days to help with your tactical shooting, help with your drawing and so forth, help with the safety issues that you may have. But there's nothing that will replace the live fire on the range, either indoor or outdoor. You've got to get that in. I know that ammunition is expensive. Learn how to, you know, take the ammunition and build it yourself. You have to find a way to be on the range, especially if you are carrying a firearm. shooting once a year to qualify just doesn't get it, folks. It doesn't get it. Every day at POI, we read, see, hear, know about shootings involving private security, as many, if not more, than law enforcement. You got to be there. You got to train. You got to do your job. Because if not, you're going to lose when the time comes to address the threat. We'll be right back.
I was just going to the grocery store.
Seatbelt violators, beware.
I forgot to put it on.
If you're pulled over because you've broken the law.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable.
And you're not wearing your seatbelt.
It's broken, but I was going to have it fixed.
No matter what your excuse is, you will get a ticket in addition to the ticket for your original violation.
Click it or ticket? That's pretty easy to remember.
Hi, my name is James. I ride a bus to school every day. When you see a stop school bus with its lights on and stop sign out, remember the following. When the road has two lanes, all the cars in both directions must stop. When the road has more than one lane and the center is paved, all vehicles in both directions must stop. When the road has an unpaved space, like grass or dirt or a raised barrier, the vehicles behind the bus must stop. Cars going the opposite direction can go, but must proceed with caution. So if you remember these rules, my friend and I will get to school and home safely every day. Stop on red, kids ahead.
All right, we are back here on the Private Officer Beat Radio. Glad that you are with us tonight. We were just talking a moment ago about officer safety, about the shootings. I mean, this is a every day, every week, every year type thing in this business. You just have to be prepared. As you know, we got kind of carried away, and time went by a lot faster than I realized, so we had to cut into our break. But I did want to mention that we are on the air live, and you can always email us at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. You can submit your news, your training events, or anything else that you'd like for us to broadcast to our listeners at radio@privateofficer.com. Also, check out our forums. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and a number of other social media simply by going to our website at privateofficer.com, and you can follow us 24/7 right there. We try to mention it because, you know, there are a lot of new listeners, and we want to make sure that everyone has the contact information for us. I also wanted to mention that this past week, you probably heard, I believe it was Friday, Seattle Pacific University in Seattle, Washington, a student security officer was a hero during a shooting incident where a man was on campus and shot several people. He killed one. While the man was reloading his weapon, a student security officer, I guess that's a volunteer student who works with the security department, he pepper sprayed the armed suspect and then tackled him along with several other students and held him until police could get on scene and subdue him and get him cuffed up. So we send out kudos to John Meese. He was interviewed today with the media, and he said he's not a hero. He does not forgive the shooter yet because he did kill one person, and he just happened to be at the right place at the right time. We are trying to reach John, and hopefully we'll be able to interview him next week. Again, kudos to him. And we also want to mention very quickly that Christopher Sparkman, he was the FedEx security officer shot about 5 or 6 weeks ago there in Georgia, just outside of Atlanta. He was shot by a gunman at the FedEx distribution center. He's undergone another surgery today. This is his 18th one, and he's facing several others. Please send him best wishes and prayers and cards. He's at the Wellstar Kennestone Hospital. Wellstar Kennestone Hospital, and that is in Georgia, and it's in Cobb County. Cobb County, Georgia. You can check it out on the web and get an address. Again, his name is Christopher Sparkman. We hope to be able to talk with him live as soon as he is up to it. We have a lot going on here at Private Officer International, as always. I do also want to mention that we did have an award presentation and a program that we do every year. We had a very light award nomination as well as award presentation, only 4 awards this year, which is very light. And there are a number of reasons. One, we have a hard time reaching people. 2, when a nomination is presented to us, it often doesn't include any phone numbers or contact, sometimes not even email, so we can't get back to the nominator. And also, this year, we had a lot of deserving people, but there was just no way. They had no phone number, no actual way to contact them. We did have a conference call about 4 or 5 weeks ago. We talked about ambassadors, and this is one of the duties of an ambassador, and we hope to be able to really be able to reach those deserving folks that, you know, are very hard to get in touch with, and we'll be keeping you up to date with that. Hopefully next year in the 2015 awards that we do in April, we'll be able to present more. Now, in the meantime, you can always submit nominations if you're an employer or a coworker, or even for yourself, simply by going to our website at privateofficer.com and click on the link for the awards program and submit the paperwork and the form, and we will be happy to run that by our awards committee and get that award presented to you. We have a lot going on, as I've said, and it seems like we always do, and we're always traveling and trying to catch up to all the stuff that we have to do at the office as well. But I want to remind you that right now we're doing a 4-part business seminar. If you have a security company, a training school, or an investigation firm, or you are trying to set one up, we're offering a 4-part free business seminar. Go to our website at privateofficer.com. On the bottom of the page, click on the link and register. You will get a free 4-week business seminar, how to start a business, finances of the business, the legalities of a business, the stumbling blocks of owning a business. I think it'll be more than informative, and, you know, it is free, so there's really no excuse that you can't afford it. Again, just go to our website at privateofficer.com. At the bottom of the front page, register today. We also have a 2-day training that's going on throughout the country. It's called the Security Training Summit. We invite you to register for a number of those that are coming up. The next couple that are on the list will be the Atlanta, Georgia market, the Washington, D.C. area, which also will include Maryland and Virginia, Stamford, Connecticut, and I believe we'll be going back into Nashville in September, and a number of other locations. Check out more information about that on the front page of our website at privateofficer.com. 2 days of solid training. Workplace violence, use of force, and active shooter. You won't want to miss this training. It's free. If you'd like to sponsor it, you're a business, or you'd like to get together with some other companies in your area to sponsor it, simply contact us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. The sponsors get a lot of media attention. They're included in all of our press releases, all of our publications. They're also listed on our website. There's just a ton of stuff that we do in conjunction with the sponsorship. We'll also this year include a lifetime free membership, reserve seating for employees of the company who's sponsoring it, and a number of other items as well. This year, we're also in a number of cities combining our memorial services along with our training, so you won't want to miss it. Check it out at privateofficer.com. Good evening, Private Officer Radio.
Good evening. This is Jeff Powers with CEC.
Hey, good evening, sir. How are you?
Fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. You are live on the Private Officer Beat Radio. We're going to go ahead and introduce you in this segment coming up, if you'll just hang on for 1 second.
Will do.
All right, so on this next segment, we will be talking about alternative methods of educating shoplifters, preventing shoplifting as shoplifting continues to rise. We're going to take one more quick break, and we will be right back.
It's for my wife.
My husband still doesn't know the real story about that dent in the van.
I've never told her that I used to be a lifeguard at a nude beach.
I've never told my kids about the time I was arrested for streaking.
My friends don't know that I still sleep with my teddy bear.
But they all do know one thing about me.
And that I'm an organ donor.
I'm an organ donor.
And that's one thing that's too important to keep a secret. Because I could save somebody's life. How cool is that?
Nurse, I need you to apply pressure to the head wound until I can get to it. I'm concerned she's lost too much blood.
Oh, no.
You in the corner, who are you? You're not supposed to be here.
She's my girlfriend, Doctor.
You need to wait out in the waiting room.
Please, Doctor, I want to stay with her.
Look, she's been badly injured. So if you want to do what's best for her, you need to let us do our work.
Please, Doctor, she has to be okay. I didn't mean to do this. I love her.
Wait a second. You were the driver?
Yes, but I didn't mean to. I swear, we went to dinner. I was just buzzed. I only had a few drinks.
Just buzzed? Why didn't you tell us that? In that case, your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great. You want to get out of here?
I can't believe this. Really, Doctor? She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzz driving.
1-34, be advised, 923, please, and associates with the suspect and the victim.
All right, we are back live on the Private Officer Beat. This half hour, we're going to be talking about the increase in shoplifting. And, you know, we've looked at the common methods of penalizing those involved in shoplifting and retail crime. We've looked at jail time. We've looked at fines. We've looked at probation. We've given them every opportunity. But now there's a company based out of Utah who's looked at educating as an alternative to being arrested. And we're going to be talking with a representative in this half hour. And maybe we'll learn a few things. Maybe this is the direction to go. All right, we're back live with a representative tonight from the company who has a different alternative way to help shoplifters maybe get back on track, Corrective Education, based out of Orem, Utah. Tell us your name again, sir.
My name is Jeff Powers.
Well, good evening, Jeff, and tell us a little bit about your company, synopsis of it, and then we'll kind of go into the shoplifting end of it and how you've entered the market and what you're doing to help shoplifters.
Sure enough. Again, my name is Jeff Powers. CEC is about a three-year-old company based out of Orem, Utah, with a sole focus on restorative justice. So with low-risk offenders, we screen and qualify to make sure that through multiple database verification, mobile technology enabled, that a person is a low-risk offender, and we offer them a voluntary option of taking an educational program. We're targeting 30-40% of the retail theft today is a qualified low-risk offender, somebody who made a mistake, a good person who made a bad decision. And we're trying to relieve the burden, a substantial burden on the criminal justice system with millions, literally millions and millions of shoplift arrests in the United States.
The last figure that we saw on shoplifting arrests for 2012 was the last figure that came out. We saw that 1,700,000+ were apprehended or arrested, and that number continues to climb every year. Your company has found a little bit of a niche. There are other companies who do similar preventative education for other offenders. And I know that there's a company that deals with casinos, crimes, and things of that nature. Tell us how your company got involved in this type of education.
So the founder was a gentleman named Daryl Huntsman. He had a couple of folks at Harvard. He has a Harvard MBA. A couple of the folks that were in school with him started bantering around the burden, the financial burden on criminal justice, and they started to put together a company around a closed-loop system of how to take a low-risk offender from a technology perspective, qualify them, and then make sure that they are educated through a cognitive behavioral program that's actually been around for over 20 years and has an extremely low recidivism rate. The real crux of it is taking a low-risk offender and giving them a second chance. You know, the collective justice today that we see, the traditional punitive, you know, they're looking at who broke the law, which law has been broken, who did it, and what's the punishment that person deserves, where CEC is founded on the restorative justice. Who was harmed, and how do we make sure that their needs are met and do it in a collaborative effort with law enforcement and prosecution?
All right. Well, our listeners are a mix of law enforcement, private security, loss prevention. Some are just private citizens. Some are retired officers. Tell me kind of how you get your clients. I'm sure that you have a marketing plan. Some probably hear about your system and come to you. And kind of walk us through the steps. The shoplifter themselves, this is an alternative to being prosecuted, correct?
It is. It's a voluntary option if they choose. It's a pre-complaint. So as opposed to the retailer actually, you know, filing a complaint with law enforcement, this is in a pre-complaint stage.
Right. You have a screening process that you have a checklist, and if they don't match this criteria, you know, they don't fit the program. Kind of tell us how you acquire, first of all, your customers and the shoplifters, and then a little bit about the program itself. I know it's online, and kind of walk us through those steps.
Will do. So I've been in the retail security technology space for close to 30 years. A lot of my counterparts and people that I've worked with, I recruited them into the company to help us get in front of the appropriate retailers to make sure that we were offering the program to retailers that had high calls for service into law enforcement. That team that we've put together has done a good job of introducing CEC to these core retailers, and then retailers as a whole are going to pilot. They're going to go down the path to see if the program works. There's no cost associated with the CEC program to retail, to law enforcement, or prosecution. It's completely offender funded. So
you're generating your income through the offender.
That's correct. So we've acquired some very high quantity call for service retailers, and in conducting these pilots, we establish rapport with law enforcement to make sure that they understand that our stated goal is to reduce the numbers of calls for service in the communities with which the retailers operate. So the better job that we can do to screen the low-risk offender, the lower the calls for the calls for service that they get put in. And then the second part of that is if we can lower the calls to law enforcement, we're going to lower the docket numbers for prosecution as a product of that. The reason the program works is really twofold. We have coaches, life coaches, that are assigned to each offender when they call into ORM or we reach out to them after they voluntarily accepted the program and they enter into an agreement with CEC. We walk that one life coach, walks that offender through their entire 6 to 8 hour online course.
So I want to back up just a little bit, Jeff. Okay, you have a set number of clients. Your referral comes from the client. Okay, I have worked in loss prevention. I've been a district manager for LPM for a number of large retailers. So I am with XYZ Box Store, and you've obtained me as a client. There are certain criteria that have to be met when I have a shoplifter in front of me. That person meets the criteria, I refer them to you, and your company takes over from that point, correct?
Yes and no. So you're right up to the point that the our criteria is the retailer's criteria. So we're not instituting or implementing any rules or policies different from retail. We just outfit an iPad with the parameters that the retail clients give us. So if they have eight parameters.
Well, when I talked the other day with your partner there, one of the concerns I had was if you're saying you let the retailer set the criteria, how do you know you're not getting an organized crime, retail crime offender who's been through the system 50 times, or you're not getting somebody who is a habitual shoplifter who's only going to do it to avoid getting arrested again?
It's a good question. So what we do is at the point that you, the loss prevention professional, makes the stop and brings that person back in, we're going to pull some information, name, address, driver's license number, if we can get it. We enter that into the iPad, and that's going to go away to a LexisNexis database of 50 million records, and we're going to validate any criminal history at that point.
Okay.
Normally, as you know, being a professional organized retail crime, it's not their first rodeo when they're in there with a $30 shoplift offense.
Okay, so you do have a method of doing that backdoor screening or background check because you want to know who you're dealing with, you know, as well.
Absolutely. And the criteria, again, we match up what the retail parameter is, which is age, dollar amount, below felony, above a certain dollar amount. We'll put those into right down. We can drill it right down to the store. But when it comes to the background screening and making sure that that person qualifies, that's all being done through CEC's database verification. If we pick them up in any of the databases that we go out to check, they're not going to qualify. The asset protection or loss prevention professional is just going to get a red screen that says, call law enforcement.
Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted our listeners to understand that there was some steps and that this wasn't just going to be an easy out for every shoplifter that came through the retailer's door. All right, so you've got them. You pick them up as a client. You have life coaches that take over, and go ahead and walk us through that process.
So once they're and no problem on the interruption, I believe. So the information, and it's a little bit it's extremely tight on the qualification. That's one thing to emphasize to the listeners, that from a retail and law enforcement perspective, we don't want to put anybody, we don't want to give anybody an opportunity that truly doesn't deserve it. And that's what keeps those percentages down in the 30-40 percentile. If they do qualify, however, we're going to immediately put them in the queue with a life coach to be on the phone. And what we're trying to do is instill in that offender a trust factor. Somebody does, in fact, care. And what we see from a completion rate is it's astounding for a diversion program to have the numbers of offenders who are paying for and completing the program, and then the recidivism rates that we're pulling from the retailers that we've deployed are extremely low, encouragingly low. And a lot of that has to do with the core content of the program, but also that one-on-one touch with the life coach.
All right, so the steps are that basically you pick up the offender through your client. This is prior to an arrest. He doesn't get arrested. He voluntarily agrees to go through your program. And a life coach contacts him. He has an online program that he has to go through, and he also has to meet a couple of other steps. And he pays for this, obviously. And if he completes, you know, it's kind of like an outpatient program. If he completes this program, then that's it. He's done with, correct?
It is, and it's a one and done. So what we have from a policy standpoint is if somebody enters into the program, they pay for and complete the program, we're going to give them a certificate that enables them to go back into the establishment where they were apprehended to show that they've completed the course. It's up to the store whether they'll allow them back in. Most do, because they become an extremely loyal customer to that establishment for giving them this opportunity. But if they're apprehended again within a 12-month period, they're going to potentially face the crime that they've committed as well as the crime that they committed originally.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the other concerns. And talking with EJ, I'm also in law enforcement, and talking with EJ, you know, one of the concerns was, you know, if the person doesn't comply with the program, if they offend during the program or shortly thereafter, most states, a misdemeanor of shoplifting, you got a year to get a warrant. So, you know, if that year expires, then that person's not going to get arrested. And if he's someone who's been around the block a few times, he knows if he stretches out that time, then he can just tell you to go take a walk. He's not going to finish the program, and he doesn't have any fear of being arrested because the
That's a great point. The insurance policy to that is extremely good communication with law enforcement to the extent that we have technologically integrated with several law enforcement agencies where within 14 to 30 days, we know whether that person is not going to complete the course. So statistically, from an analytics standpoint, we're very accurate with completion.
Right.
At the point that we realize there's going to be a failure to comply, we electronically forward that case to law enforcement with an admission of guilt, all of the evidence, everything from a case management perspective, then goes to law enforcement, and we do it within 30 days.
But the store would still have to be the affiant on the affidavit for the arrest. So law enforcement's not going to pick up the case and go, oh, okay, we'll go get this guy. It doesn't work like that. The store,
that's right.
LP so, agent or manager still has to come in and sign that warrant, either before a magistrate or in some jurisdictions, the law enforcement agency will take the affidavit and go apply for the warrant. But in most cases, it's going to be the store representative going through the steps.
You're absolutely right. And when I talk about integration, what some of the law enforcement, and we're in 35 states, some of the law enforcement agencies will ask that it be electronically forwarded to them versus a call for service to come out and pick up the affidavit.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I understand. You know, it's an interesting concept. I think that it's definitely going to help some folks who have made an honest mistake. Having worked in loss prevention for many years, from the, I don't want to say the low-end retailer, but some of those were the low-end discount stores, and all the way up to the higher end, you see all types of people that come through the doors. And sometimes it's a mistake. Sometimes it's, let's see if I can get away with it. You know, there's all kinds of reasons. And I've caught everything from doctors to police officers and everything in between. And, you know, I think that with some people, this is a help. Other people, I think it's just a delay. You know, because they've probably offended before. This is kind of like the DUI schools, and there are other educational programs out there to prevent the offender from having to go through the system. And this is kind of, you know, it's a help to some folks, and to others it's kind of a delay into the inevitable.
My only comment to that is we really try to qualify on the front end to make sure that we don't give someone that delay opportunity. So by tightening down the criteria,
there's really no way to know. Giving everyone that opportunity, that chance. And I think that you're doing a great thing for most people. But unfortunately, there's always going to be those, you know, few.
Absolutely.
That,
absolutely. Know? They're going to be people that try to take advantage of it that have no intention of changing. But, you know, this is kind of like that, how are we going to know if we don't try? Because the current system, the way it works today, when there are retailers that call hundreds of thousands of times in small municipalities for service, and then they load the docket with prosecution, the current system is overburdened. So we're making good progress.
Well, one of the problems, and you make a good point there, we see it across the country. We have an association also of law enforcement and security combined. We see the number of service calls continue to jump, especially in small law enforcement areas where retail along the interstates have become big business for the community. But unfortunately, it's also become a big strain on the resources. The problem is that many retailers call and they prosecute everyone. Back when I started, back in the 70s, early 80s, the first retailer I worked for, he didn't care. They didn't care if it was 99 cents or $99. The person got arrested. And there has to be some common sense method to prosecution. And in the smaller communities, they just can't stretch out their resources to the point where they come to the same store 5 or 6 times a day. It, you know, there's got to be better communication between the retailer and the law enforcement agency.
If you're right, we'll, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to emphasize a point that you just brought up, that when you do, when you take that punitive approach and you literally take the 99 cent to 99 punitive approach, you're really leveraging in a negative sense the future, because quite a few of the people that are in that qualification range are juveniles, and statistically, incarcerating juveniles in this country produces a bad decision-making adult. It doesn't help the cause that we're all trying to help, which is reduce the burden on law enforcement and the communities we live. By taking a juvenile and taking them and having that punitive mentality, it's very difficult to change their behavior through a punitive approach.
Well, you know, in the juvenile aspect of it, as you know, almost zero juveniles get taken into custody for shoplifting these days. In most jurisdictions, they get a citation through the mail. As long as they want to pick up the juvenile at the department store, at the retailer, the officer releases them to the parent, and, you know, they go to juvenile court later down the road. Only in extreme cases, cases where there's been assault or a felony or some other, maybe unable to contact parents, as the juvenile get transported. So they're not really putting them in the system. As you know, juvenile court, depending again on the jurisdiction, is really just that eye-opening experience for the juvenile to say, this is what's going to happen if this continues. But I really think that your system is good. Now, you brought up juvenile, so you obviously have a program for the juvenile offender as well?
We do, and my point about putting them in the system, the punitive approach, when they do call the parents and the parents come and pick them up and they're given a citation, if they're transported, which to your point, absolutely very low numbers, it's about stopping the behavior that put them on that path. So the punitive approach, whether it's a citation, whether it's a scared straight approach of taking them down and showing them what may be, it's proven that it doesn't work. So what, and it doesn't work as well as it should. Let me qualify that. What we're trying to say is that if we can intervene, or any diversion program can intervene in that juvenile aspect to change their behavior at a young enough age that they can figure out how to have the will and the skill to change the path they're on, that's going to make an impact in this country changing. We have, as you know, I mean, there's a great book out right now called Burning Down the House by Mel Bernstein, which I highly recommend, that talks about the juvenile and the punitive system. It's a sad state of affairs that we have hundreds of thousands of juveniles incarcerated in this country, and we're not giving it an opportunity to educate them and change their behavior early enough.
That's exactly right. There are alternatives. There's a lot of alternatives out there. We just have to make those resources available, and we have to be willing to put them in place to give the person that opportunity. And obviously, if they choose not to take it or they go back down the road again, that's on them. Couple other real quick points. I don't want to keep you on the phone all day, but the system that you have in place, and I call it the system because obviously they have a course of training. They have different steps to meet. And like you said earlier, it's a one and done. The system, both for juveniles and adults, who really is your target market? I mean, who do you really think is the prime suspects for you? You're looking, obviously, for either someone who is an initial offender or potentially first-time, you know, offender, or somebody who is, you know, I'm not sure. Tell us who you're targeting at this point.
You know, based on the statistics that we see of the people qualifying and accepting the course, it's a pretty wide range. So it goes from a teenager to somebody that their economic situation has changed drastically, They've been a good person. They've made good decisions, and they made a bad decision in their 50s. So we have a broad spectrum, male and female, pretty balanced. Married, single, pretty balanced.
I want to bring one thing up. You just said a key word that I was going to ask you next, and that's economics. I know right now there's a number of large retailers who have done a trial and error on civil collection of fees. Rather than prosecute someone, they release them on a promise to pay on demand. I'm sure that you're aware of it. And there's actually a lawsuit in court right now against one retailer because they kind of force the person, hey, if you don't sign this, you are going to get arrested. And then they get a demand letter weeks later from the attorneys for outrageous sums, $600, $800, when the object shoplifted was $29. And, of course, the attorneys add their fees and so forth. Well, there is a lawsuit, and I believe that this is probably going to go at least to the state supreme level, and maybe even further, where the stores really are twisting the arm of the shoplifter, and economically, if they can afford it, then they can avoid arrest. But if they can't economically afford that penalty, that civil penalty, then they go to jail. And that's kind of what this is in some ways. If you've got someone, unless you have a program where you're taking anyone and everyone, which obviously you're, you know, in business to make money, you can't just give it away for free. So you're affording an opportunity to people who can afford it. What about the people who can't afford it?
You make a great point about civil demand, and I would draw a very clear distinction between what we're doing in the restorative justice space and what civil demand is all about. Civil demand is a legal, civil restitution process in every state in the country, and retailers and victims have the opportunity to go collect that civil demand from people that have offended, as well as criminal restitution and jail time and all of the process that goes with that. That civil demand, the lawsuit that you're referring to, is based on coercion. The difference with what we're doing in a restorative justice space is really twofold. One, we're voluntarily, they're going to voluntarily commit to a program that they're not going to be turned away if they cannot afford the program. They're going to be dropped out of the program if they don't complete their coursework or they don't complete the payment process that we put in place for them. But what a major difference with these two programs, civil demand and restorative justice, is we're providing them with an extremely important, powerful educational program. And if they can't afford it, and we can verify that they can't afford it through open communication and documentation, we have a scholarship program where we'll offer to help offset or put in a payment structure as low as they can afford. Our goal is not to exclude anyone because they cannot afford the program.
I appreciate that answer, and that's why I wanted to bring that up and inject that, because I know some folks are going to parallel the two, and I wanted to bring up the point about the education, because you're right, the civil demand is do it or else, and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of folks who sign those contracts, because that's what they become, are contracts, have been left out in the cold when, you know, the wolf came knocking at the door for the money. Your process is an educational one, and I appreciate that, because obviously education is what's going to make the difference. It's what's going to change minds. And I'm glad that you do have some type of scheduled payment or scholarship that's going to help those who truly can really pay for it themselves. But I know that someone out there is listening, and they're going to say, well, it sounds like they're just twisting the shoplifter's arm just like the civil demand. And I wanted you to respond to that, and I really appreciate the way that you did.
Yeah, thank you. I get a little bit up on my soapbox on the civil demand piece, because having been in this space, I started in the loss prevention world when civil demand was being legislated throughout various states. And it initially, if you think back to the late 80s, it caught a tremendous momentum. There was a tremendous surge of collecting for the victim. And I understood that because they were being wronged. But now it's a form letter. It's an auto form letter that goes out at the maximum amount that the state allows. And as a victim, they're going to try to collect as much as they can. But from an offender perspective, they're not getting what they need to for that money. In other words, they pay their civil demand. They don't get anything for that. And I think that's therein lies the biggest difference.
What, you know, they're kind of hijacked because it's either do this or go to jail, and the choice is yours. And if you decide to go to – I've been in the room. I've heard the spiel. If you decide not to do this, then we'll just go ahead and have you arrested. You'll have to get an attorney. The attorney's going to charge you $1,000, blah, blah, blah. And it goes on and on. And the person is like, okay, just – I'll sign it. Just let me sign it, you know?
Right, right. Agreed.
So it is, it's a tricky situation. A lot of stores do use civil demand still. Your system obviously is about education. So hopefully it makes a difference and it reaches the people that it needs to reach. And obviously you have a screening process, so you're not getting repeat offenders, felons, people who are organized, you know, retail crime suspects. And so it sounds like a good program. What's your next step for the business? What is the business looking to do? Obviously, you're not in all 50 states yet, but are you looking to grow in throughout the country, other countries? Are you looking to spin off into franchises? What's the company, what's the next step for the company?
Well, I appreciate it. It's a great question. So we're making a very concerted push on the right customers in the North American market. So we have the United States and Canada. We've spent some what we'll call discovery time in the United Kingdom because they're just a little bit ahead in the restorative justice process than we are in this country. So we're making a very focused attempt on the North American market, and that's really the 50 U.S. states and Canada. And Canada has a little bit different view of the offender-victim relationship as well. But in the U.S., our business plan is around making sure that we're attracting and acquiring the right customers, and that means that people that have internal or external loss prevention departments make apprehensions of shoplifters, have a very tight policy of how they administer those rules and regulations for their loss preventers. And we've had very good success in getting it out. As you know, from anything in law enforcement, prosecution, when it's new, it has to be trusted and verified. And I would offer you and your audience an interesting validation. One of our early pilot programs we did in a city in Florida, and I'm happy to provide you with this backup detail, but, you know, a very tough customer and the chief of police in this 125,000 resident community. And the chief just penned a very positive letter completely endorsing the program. And it's a real powerful statement because the people that we want to partner with are the retailers, law enforcement, and prosecution. And when that comes together, the program is extremely impactful.
It is, and especially when you have that type of support and support from the community, it makes a big impact. You know, I think that I like the program. I'd like to learn more about it. I know we have a lot of decision makers that are listening that probably want to know more about it, and we're going to give them your web and your contact before we leave. But, you know, in this world, it's so hard sometimes to trust companies, new ideas. I'm sure you get pushback, but it sounds like, you know, you're on the road to structuring it in such a manner where people can't say that it's all about the money or it's about this thing or the other thing, because you've put it together to the point where you've got your check and balances, you're not just taking anyone for the money, and it's obviously you've got a true focus. It's a business, but you still have a true focus of education.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's exactly what our mission is, to change the communities where we do business and do it in such a way that sharing some of that offender funding with local law enforcement or prosecution, it's really a matter of pulling the right partnerships together to make the impact. If it were singularly about the money, I think it would fail miserably. It has to be about partnership and community.
Now, do you operate in such a way where you have regional managers, or is everything done from corporate? Do you have marketing staff across the country? How does that operate?
So we have a headquarters in Orem, Utah, which is south of Salt Lake, and it's a hotbed for young technologists, right? There are several major universities that we pull from. So we have a very solid foundation from the technology standpoint, because that's extremely important in the delivery of any of these programs, is through technology enablement. And then regionally in the field, what I've done is I've set up, again, going back to my Rolodex of extremely successful, trusted professionals in the Northeast, in the Midwest, in the South, in the West Coast, and the Southeast. And I personally live in the Midwest. I live outside of Detroit. So we're spread out across the country. We have representation, as I stated, in Canada. So we're doing it on a local basis. But as you know, that means you get into a national headquarter, and that representative is going to have responsibility for potentially all 50 states.
Well, I'd like to talk with you a little bit more off air. I was telling EJ that I do travel a lot. You know, he told me he had a tight schedule in the next couple of days as well, but maybe there's something we can do together. We've got a lot of people in loss prevention that we connect with through our training and our association and so forth, but I like where you're going with the business, and that's why we've had you on the air, and hopefully some of our listeners who are decision makers will be in touch with you.
Well, Rick, I appreciate the time, and any way that we can support your program and your efforts, I look forward to connecting and doing that. So thank you very much.
Do me a favor, just go ahead and give us your website address so that the listeners will have it, and any contact of who they should contact if they're interested in more information on your services. And then if you'll send me an email with your contact information, I'll be in touch with you.
I will do that. So we're at www.correctiveeducation.com. All one word, correctiveeducation.com. And the contact information for inquiry into the business is the letter E, Echo, J, Juliet, C, Charlie, EJC@correctiveeducation.com.
All right. I appreciate the time that you spent tonight out of your schedule. And like I said, it's very interesting. It's obviously a step in the right direction, and hopefully your business continues to do well. And I look forward to working with you guys on some other future projects.
Hey, Rick, thank you very much, and best of luck to you and your listeners. Thank you.
All right, have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're coming right back after these messages. Don't go away.
34 BA 533.
There was the explosion, and I remember just opening my eyes, and I got both of my legs. I had surgery after surgery, and what's going to happen next? The Wounded Warrior Project said, look, brother, everything's going to be okay. 3 months from now, 4 months from now, a year from now, you'll be fine. I don't know if I would be as well adjusted as I am now if it wasn't for them.
To learn more, call 1-877-832-6997 or visit woundedwarriorproject.org.
EducationEducation.com. Check them out today if you're involved in retail security, retail management, or you run a boutique store and have problems, issues with shoplifters. This is just another alternative way to helpfully prevent shoplifting in your store. And maybe once the message gets out, you know, shoplifters will wise up. Probably not. That's all for tonight's show. Be with us next week. We've got another hot topic and a great guest who will be on the show with us. Join us later this week for our midweek episode. We are traveling on the road, so we'll be bringing that to you late in the day. But we appreciate you listening to us here on the Private Officer Beat, And remember, be safe, be blessed, and we'll be back on the radio next week. Till then, see ya. Be safe out there.